Thank you very much. An American decided that he was going to take a trip to Europe, and stepping off the airplane in Frankfurt, he went out and found himself a cab, and on the way downtown, sitting in the back seat, he leaned up to the front and talked to the driver and said, "What kind of car is this?" The driver was somewhat taken back by it and couldn't believe anybody didn't understand what kind of a car he was driving in, but very politely turned back and said, "Sir, this is a Mercedes-Benz." "Hmm," he says. They went on a couple of miles, and he leaned up to the front of the seat again, and he said, "What's that thing in the front of the car?" Referring to the ornament up there. And by now, the driver was incredulous, couldn't believe that a guy would make a comment like that, and couldn't resist the temptation. So he said, "Sir, what that is a sight. And as I'm driving along, or there's somebody in front of me that I want to pick off, what I do is I just lean over and close one eye and get that individual in my sight, and I accelerate, I'm able to get him." About that time, there was an old lady who was walking across the street about 200 yards up the road. And he said, "Here, let me show you." And he accelerates, and he leans up there, and he just bearing down on her. And the last minute, he turns and goes around her. But as he turns and goes around her, he hears this thud. And he puts his brakes on, and he looks in the rearview mirror, and here is this dear old lady, boom, lands on the ground. He jumps out of the car, the American on his heels, and he runs over to her, and he's just absolutely broken up over it. He says, "I can't believe it." He says, "I was sure I missed that lady. Can't understand how this could happen." And the American says, "Yeah, you were a lousy shot. I had to get over the door." I am a lousy shot, but by the grace of God, maybe we can communicate with one another in the time we have together. It's an incredible privilege for me to be with you. By the way, that story was dedicated to John Advocat. I knew he was there in the audience, and I thought about that as I thought of sharing that with you. John is the gentleman that Jack referred to when he said he had the privilege of meeting this navigator missionary serving in West Germany. John, I'm going to ask you to stand. John's been a co-laborer of mine, a buddy in the faith for many, many years. Small sort of a guy, isn't he? Really, we were together, I guess, in Germany earlier, but we just don't see an awful lot of each other, and I'm looking forward to this week. I want to introduce a couple of other folks to you. There's a young man and his wife who have grown to become good friends, and I trust we'll eventually become real close friends in the Lord as God welds our hearts together. And that's a fellow by the name of Lee Yee and his wife Miltini. Now, I've learned a lot about the Chinese since talking to Lee. I understand there is the ABCs and the OBCs and the I don't know how many others. An OBC is an overseas-born Chinese. An ABC is an American-born Chinese. Now, you know as much as I do. But Lee and his wife are ABCs, and they just, a number of years ago, left a career with Goldman Sachs and went to Dallas Theological Seminary to spend 4 years of study. And he and his wife have finished that. They've got three beautiful children and have felt led to move here to Colorado Springs. And the two of us are going to be co-laboring together for the next 6 months to a year. It's kind of an open-ended, not so sure where God's leading deal. And I'm wondering if the two of them would stand. I'd like you to get to know them. They're a precious couple. Then, last but by no means least, is my beloved. And that's Liette. Sweetheart, if you would stand. She leaned over to me and said, "Doesn't seem possible that it was 22 years ago this summer that we left Colorado Springs here at Glen Eyrie and went to Michigan to begin our first assignment as husband and wife with the Navigators." But that's exactly what happened. And we want to tell you a little bit. I want to tell you a little bit about that this evening. My task, if I can call it that, for the evening is to give you my testimony. And before we have a word of prayer, let me just say a couple of things about that. Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 10, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am." And that's my testimony. By the grace of God, I am what I am. And I'd like to divide my testimony this evening into three segments. It seems to me, at least from my perspective and where I live, that there are three areas of a man's life that are uniquely sensitive. And I'd like to revolve my testimony around those three: his vocation, his wife, and his children. With that in mind, let's bow our hearts and our heads and our minds together in a word of prayer. Father, you know how hard it is for me to talk about myself. I don't enjoy it. It makes me uncomfortable. And I am self-conscious. But I pray tonight that as I share the work that you did, that it would become evident that it is you. That somehow I would disappear behind the fog of words, and that our Lord Jesus would be exalted. It was he who said, "And I, if I be lifted up, I will draw all men unto myself." And that's our prayer tonight, that we would be able to exalt our Lord Jesus, and that you draw us to yourself in a way that would help us to understand you better and draw us closer to you. For Jesus' sake, amen. My first recollection of God was as a child in the San Francisco Bay Area, lying on my back on the lawn of our home, looking at the clouds as they passed over the telephone poles and wondering what it was all about. Why was I here? I didn't come from a home in which we really talked a lot about spiritual things. We didn't read the Bible, didn't pray, didn't attend church, didn't do things like that. It was a fine, fine home in which I was raised. For example, I never remember my mother and dad ever crossing words with one another, never even raised their voice to one another. I'm sure they had their moments, but they always did it in a place that was private from us children. It was a very happy, serene home. Mom and Dad are fine, fine people. I say are. They're still alive and living in the Bay Area. Just delightful folks. And possibly it was because they were so good that they never felt a need for Jesus Christ. That was not true of their son. For I was aware of my own sinfulness and depravity, my propensity for evil. Couldn't believe, for example, when I read for the first time Romans chapter 7 to discover Paul saying, "The good that I would, I do not, but the evil that I would not, that I do." And I thought to myself, the guy's reading my mail. That's where I've lived all of my life. And I had this emptiness, this void in my life. Don't know how to describe it to you in any other words than that. From my earliest recollection, that void existed. And I remember at night sometimes I would go to bed and I'd cry, and my mom and dad would come in and they would say, "What's the problem?" And I'd say, I just don't know. I don't know how to describe it. There's something missing in my life, and I don't know what it is. And of course, they couldn't help me. They didn't even know what I was talking about. But as the years progressed, that void became larger, and the feeling of emptiness and alienation from life intensified. And it expressed itself in a variety of ways, but the way that I'd like to communicate to you this evening is that I went on a search. I began looking for the answer. By the time I was in university, I was really buttonholing people, asking them, "How do you fill the void that exists in your life? What is the reason for existence? Where do you find purpose?" And nobody could tell me. Nobody could even tell me where to go or where to look. And one day, I met a man, a carpenter by trade. We were swimming together at the swimming hole up at the summer home where my family had in a little community called Twain Heart. And he said, "Henriksen, I think I got the answer for you." And we went to the living room of his home, and he opened up the scriptures, and he told me the story of the gospel, that Jesus Christ had died for my sins. Well, that was good news, because I knew I was a sinful man. He did not have to persuade me that I was lost. And he said that the living God would enter into my life and take up residence if I was willing to allow him. And I thought to myself, only an idiot would turn an offer down like that. I mean, if the sovereign of the universe was willing to take up residence in an individual's life, wow, what an offer. So there in his home, I did what he suggested. I prayed. I don't even remember what I said, but God, come in and fill my life. And those of you who have had that kind of an experience know that he did just that. He turned me every way but loose. I was a changed man. And he so filled that void in my life that my soul virtually burst and was running over. And when I left his home, I kept him up until about 2:30 or 3 in the morning. I wanted to know how you get to know God. What do you do from here? You know, this is an awesome book. You know, 1,200 pages, a small print, and no pictures. And, you know, how do you handle it? You know, I was used to passing my English courses by reading classic comics. I didn't know anything about reading books like this. And so I kept him up until about 2:30 or 3 o'clock in the morning. But as I left his home to go to mine, I knew that I'd never be happy doing anything but serving God, whatever that meant. So, like I say, the book was awesome to me. I'd never gotten into it, knew nothing about it. And so as I began to read it, it dawned on me that if I was going to prepare for a life of service for Jesus Christ, I'd have to get to know it. I was an engineering major, and the thought occurred to me that engineering would teach me how to think analytically, but if I wanted to understand God and his book, I'd have to learn to think conceptually. So I switched my major from engineering to philosophy, and I graduated with a degree in philosophy, and then my friends told me that if you really wanted to get serious with God, you go to seminary. And so I packed off for 3 years of seminary, and it was while in seminary that I met the Navs. And met a guy by the name of Skip Gray. You'll be meeting him this week if you haven't met him already. And Skip offered me an opportunity to move into his home for some further training in the Christian life. And I knew I wasn't ready to pastor a church or to serve God. I was only a couple, 3, 4, 5 years old in the Lord, whatever it was by then. And while my seminary classmates were learning about superlapsarianism and infralapsarianism, I was learning about how David killed Goliath and, you know, how Joshua prostrated himself before the captain of the Lord's host and all those other things in the Bible that were brand new to this guy. So I moved into the home and I began to prepare further in terms of my own life and my own character. When I told my mom and dad that I was going to go into the ministry, all that did was simply confirm earlier suspicions that he had regarding the erratic nature of my personality and other things that I need not mention here. And I have to say to you that from my family's perspective, going into the ministry went over like a garlic milkshake. I don't want to throw it out of context or overemphasize it, but I think that in my dad's value system, doing what I was doing, let me say this for you first. In 3 years of seminary, he got kind of used to the idea of being a pastor. As a matter of fact, there was a guy in the Masonic Lodge that he knew was a pastor, and he could visualize myself being something like that, and he kind of warmed, not really warmed, but he got used to the idea. And then when I decided to go into the Navigator home for training, he just couldn't understand that. And then when I decided that I was going to throw my lot into the Navigators and spend my life doing what Navigators do, then That really threw him into spiritual vertigo. He couldn't figure out what was going on. And from my dad's perspective, I guess doing what I did was about 6 steps lower than running a brothel. And the reason for that was that my dad has always prided himself in being able to handle his own affairs, to raise his own family, to have a good living, to buy the things that he wanted, to do what he wanted, when he wanted it, and how he wanted it. I have to say to you, he did a good job of it. I can never remember as a family unit our never being able to do what we wanted to do because of finances. That just never was a consideration. Now, it may have been, again, in the privacy of his own heart, but when we wanted to do something, we did it. And he viewed himself as a self-made man. I viewed myself as a man who was a disaster looking for a place to happen. And we never really could come together because of that. And so when I told him that I was going to go into the ministry and that people would be supporting me, that was anathema. That was worse than going on welfare. There's just no way that his value system or his mindset could come to grips with that. And so, wrestling with that and understanding that direction in my life caused a drift in my family unit was probably one of the tougher hurdles that I was able to jump or had to jump in my walk with God. I think the second thing that I had to take care of in my walk with God, the first was my vocation. The second was courtship and marriage. Now, I don't know how God has wired you. As a matter of fact, I've thought a lot about the fact that you never really know what other people are like on the basis of which you're like. We're all so different and yet so much alike. So I had a hard time evaluating that. But I knew that I wanted to marry. I wanted to have a family. And after I became a Christian, when I was dating, I dated with that objective in mind. And I have to say to you very bluntly that I shopped for a wife in those years. And I was reading one time in the book of Romans, and God really got my attention with a verse which says, "Whatsoever is not of faith is sin." And I have to say to you that I wasn't walking by faith with God in this area of my life. I tried to dismiss it, but the Spirit of God wouldn't let me. And I tried to walk around it, and the Spirit of God met me as I turned. And it got so intense that it was literally destroying my devotional life. And it wasn't until that evening when I knelt there by my bed and I gave that area of my life back to God that I finally got peace in that area of my life. I've often thought that it probably wasn't as important a decision as my conversion, but it certainly was a far more traumatic one. And a passage of scripture that God used in my life was Abraham offering Isaac on Mount Moriah. And I have to say to you, that area of my life was my Isaac. And I didn't want to kill it. And it wasn't until I was willing to take that trip to Mount Moriah without a rubber knife that God would finally give me peace. Now for me, and I'm not saying this should be for anybody else, but for me this meant that I could not date, because there was no way that I could handle myself properly in a life of faith in trusting God in this area if I were going to date. Now, to be honest with you, this took place fairly early in my Christian experience, and I thought to myself, well, God raised Isaac from the dead, God's going to raise this from the dead. So, well, every so often I go over to the grave site and linger waiting for the resurrection, and it never happened. And a year went by, and nothing. 2 years went by. 5 years went by. 6 years went by. And I began to think to myself that maybe God was calling me to a life of celibacy. I have to say to you, Jesus said, you know, some men make themselves celibates and others are born celibates and so forth. And I am not a celibate by temperament or nature or drives or any other area of my life. But I thought the grace of God has got to be sufficient. And so I stopped visiting the gravesite. I was with the Navigators at this time. I was on an assignment at a Navigator training program. Now, some of you here have visited one of those. This was one of the originals. It was started by Leroy Imes. And by the way, if you've got a Q&A time with Leroy in the morning sessions, be sure and ask him to tell you how that training program got started. That was a wild one. It was at North Platte, Nebraska, at the Maranatha Bible Camp. And I went there. I think I was the second or the third, I can't remember, staff member to go there to work with Ivan Olson and his crew at Maranatha Bible Camp. And the lady that I introduced to you this evening was there also as the Navigator Girls worker. Now, she was on staff. I was a trainee in the Navigator home. And the relationship was very platonic. And we separated at the end of the summer. And the Navigators asked us to go back the second year, both of us, something they never do. But we did. And we went back, and the second year began rather platonic as well. But in the middle of the summer, I fell in love with her. And I have to tell you, it really shook me. Didn't know how to handle that. And did not communicate it to her, didn't ask her out on a date, didn't tell her I was interested in her or loved her or anything else. The summer ended, and we went our different ways. She went to San Francisco to represent the Navigators. I came here to Glen Eyrie to continue my training. And when we separated, I asked God for three things. I said, now, Lord, if this is really of you, then I'm going to ask, first of all, that you deepen the love that I feel for her during our absence. And if it's not of you, then out of sight, out of mind. And it's easy for you to pull that off. Secondly, I'm going to ask that if it is of you, that you give me a promise from the Scriptures. The promises of God, as Ron was leading us in song this evening. And because I knew that the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked, and I knew that I could talk myself into loving her, even though it wasn't the will of God, and as you know, can find a promise out of the Scriptures, even though God didn't give it, I thought I'd ask God for a third thing that would bring a degree of objectivity to it that it would otherwise lack. I decided that after a period of time, I would go to three men who knew both of us. And I'd ask them for their counsel regarding my relationship with her. Because I was really afraid. I thought to myself, you know, I could go to the mission field, feel it was a mistake, and come home. I could take a pastor and feel it was a mistake and quit. But if I marry a girl and feel it's a mistake, tough grits. That's one of those places where 1 John 1:9 doesn't work all that well. So I've just confessed to you, there was a certain amount of trepidation in my own soul regarding that. So the first guy that I went to was Skip Gray, in whose home I was living. And it was Skip who told me, after I had come back from my first summer at Maranatha, do you have any interest in this lady? And I said, no. And he said, well, that's good, because if you do, forget it. And I forgot it. And meanwhile, he had gone to Costa Rica to represent the Navigators down there, so I wrote him. I thought to myself, well, no faster way to kill it than to start with him. Now, I didn't tell him that I was in love with her or that I was interested in her in any way other than just I wanted to find out how they felt. And I put the test of the Lord this way. I said, Lord, now if they come back neutral or anything other than wholeheartedly enthusiastic, then I'll know it's not of you. If they say, well, it may be of God, start a correspondence, then I'll know that's not of you. If they say, marry the girl, then I'll know it's of you. So I wrote to Skip, waited for his answer, and he wrote back and said, Henriksen, I was wondering when you'd see the light and marry the girl. So the second was George Sanchez, whose place Skip had replaced in Costa Rica. And George was back now in the United States, and Liette had lived with the Sanchez down in Costa Rica. So I took him out and shared that with him. And he was equally enthusiastic. The third one was Lauren Sandy, the president of the Navigators. And so I came to Lauren. Again, I didn't tell him that I had any romantic interest. I just was praying about this woman and was wondering what he thought. And we were sitting in his office here at Glen Eyrie, And I'll never forget it as long as I live. He said, well, Henriksen, he says, let's give it a test of time. Why don't you write some letters and see whether God is in it? And he paused for a moment. He said, no. He says, I don't think I'd do that at all. If I were you, I'd call her and ask her to marry me. So I called her that night. And I said, this is going to come as a surprise to you. But will you marry me? And I said, I got a head start on you. You take the time you need. And I don't want to rush you, but if God is in it, I'd like you to be my wife. And she said, well, I'm not sure if God is in it, but the Lord has been doing something like that in my life as well. And in a couple of weeks, she gave me yes as an answer. Just as an aside to that, after we were engaged. By the way, we were engaged when I was here and she was in San Francisco. And then I had 10 days with her before I went down to Mexico to serve the NAMs. And so we were separated for the year that I was living in the jungles of Mexico. And when we had those 10 days together, we were talking over with some friends, some mutual friends of ours, how God had been leading. And I shared the verse that God gave me, Isaiah 41:20, that they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord has done this. The Holy One of Israel has created it. And found, to my surprise, that that was the same verse that years earlier God had given her. And so that was just kind of an affirmation for us. And it was right here in this great hall, facing in that direction, 22 years ago this month, that she and I became husband and wife. And it was to Michigan that we went on our first assignment as husband and wife. And in those years of marriage, God has given us four beautiful children. Two of them while living in Michigan, two of them while living in the state of Texas. And it was while living in the state of Texas, in the Fort Worth to be exact, we were having a navigator training seminar. And we had asked some of the staff from Dallas Theological Seminary and Southwestern Seminary, which is a Southern Baptist seminary in Fort Worth, to help us, the staff, to go deeper in some areas in which navigators don't really emphasize, like church history or doctrine, dogma, and things like that. And so we had just come into the close of that when one of the gals who was living with us in our home said to Liette, if I were you, I'd take your son Walter in to have him checked. Things just don't look right. So she took him in to our pediatrician, who immediately put him in the hospital for some tests. And while he was in the hospital for the tests, I was taking Lauren to the airport. Lauren sent him to the airport, and we were closing the conference down. And I rushed over to the hospital to find the report. And my wife met me in the foyer, and she said, Walt, our son has leukemia. And the two of us left, and we went out to the park. And I have to tell you that I cried, and I cried, and I cried, and I cried until there was no more. I was just empty of feeling. Because I guess I knew when she looked me in the eye and told me that I had lost him. I knew something in me told me that I was going to lose the boy. About a week or two later, I took 3 days and went off for prayer and fasting at the cottage of some friends of ours on one of the lakes there near Fort Worth. And in that time, God taught me some things. And I'm not much of a mystical person. I'm not really even much of an emotional individual. But as I was spending time with God, I asked him why. I said, now, Lord, if you want my attention, I want you to know you've got my undivided attention. If there's something in my life that you don't like, I mean, speak. And thy servant heareth. And God assured me that there was nothing particular or unique in my life that he was after. And so I asked him, why? Why, God, why? And twice, not in an audible voice, but I have to tell you that it was as clear as if it had been audible. God said to me, here, Henriksen, you take the scepter. You sit on the throne. You be my counselor. You tell me what to do. And I had to back off, and I said, God, I have neither the wisdom nor the perspective to do that. And he said, well, then you just leave it with me. And that's where I left it. Subsequent to that time, we never could get him into a remission. And we moved here where I became assistant to Lauren. And it was here in Colorado Springs that he went to be with the Lord, and we buried him in a little plot of land on the east side of town. That was a tremendous loss for me. And as I wept, I knew that I was not weeping for him. I was weeping for myself. The loss was not his. It was mine. But I was convinced, gang, I was convinced down deep in my soul that this was of God. And we had a memorial service right here again in this room. And as we sat and we sang praise and gave thanks to God, I knew that I was watching the handiwork of God unfold before my eyes. Didn't understand it. Don't understand it now. Don't believe I'll understand it through eternity. I wish I could tell you that because of his death, some people came to Christ. I know of nobody. I wish I could tell you that because of his death, I was able to clean up my act. It's not so. I'm as much a wretched sinner and a product of the grace of God tonight as I was before he contracted the disease. There's nothing visible that I can report accrued by his demise. But it was nonetheless the work of God. And while we were going through it, God gave us a verse out of Psalm 77. It was verse 19, where the psalmist says, reflecting on the character of God, "Thy way is in the sea, and thy path in the great waters, and thy footsteps are not known." And the footsteps of God are hard to follow. His ways are in the sea. And as I reflect back over my life, God has led in many marvelous and wonderful ways. But three of the areas which were the most sensitive in my life was my vocation, my wife, and my children. And in the integrity of my soul, I can stand here before you this evening and say to you that in all three, as well as in every other area of my life, I am the product of the grace of God. Amen.